Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, it's that time of year again, and we're getting close to the release of this year's Healing Muse, the award-winning annual literary and visual arts journal from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities. And joining us again this morning is its editor and a regular guest on this show, Dr. Deirdre Nealon, Associate Professor of Bioethics and Humanities, to tell us all about this newest edition. And I'm thrilled to say that Deirdre has brought with her family nurse practitioner student Elijah Dute, whose essay appeared in last year's journal and was met with great interest and acclaim. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Deirdre, for those listeners who are unfamiliar with the Healing Muse, tell us again, what's your mission for the publication? It's been over the last 10 years, and you're into your 11th season, isn't that right?
We are, Linda. We're very excited that this is our 11th year, and the journal was designed to further the mission of the Center for Bioethics and Humanities, which is always here at Upstate to improve patient care. And although it might sound strange that a literary and visual arts journal can help improve patient care, I think as we hear Elijah today read part of his piece, you'll see how this piece fits. When are people who take care of people reflect upon their lives, better care occurs.
And what it takes to heal.
Definitely.
But both themselves, perhaps, and others.
Yes, for sure.
So the journal has literary and visual art as well, right?
It does. We have local artists and national artists who have sent their work in to us, and I'm very excited about this issue.
I can't wait to hear more about it. But last year, Elijah, you submitted this very moving and captivating personal story. I want to mention that you are one of the lost boys of Sudan.
I am.
Would you be willing to read just a piece of this story for us right now?
Absolutely. The title of the piece of the article is Why I Am Skinny. And it goes, what do I go for? A loaf of bread or a pair of jeans? Just after the outbreak of war in Sudan in 1987, I fled with my grandmother to Uganda for safety and survival. In Uganda, life was a daily struggle with pace, severe hunger, and death threats from the radical in our host community who mistakenly thought refugees were invading the land. While in Uganda, my grandmother did our shopping. 2 years later, my grandmother died. I was only 7 years old. This was the turning point in my life. I had to live my own life with inexperienced hands and the brain of a little boy. My neighbors check on me each morning to see if I was still alive. Glory to the Lord, at least someone was checking on me. Everybody thought I was going to starve to death. They just did not know when. One evening, as I stood watching the sunset, I remember my grandmother warning, don't throw food away, for a hunger might come someday, and you will starve to death. I felt heavy with guilt, the war that had sent us to this wilderness, the flood that overflowed our land existed because I did not save food. I remember asking my grandmother before the war came, what kind of animal is hunger? What does it look like? She said, it is an animal that is as big as unhelping and as gloomy looking as Juma the dog. I used to be afraid of Juma, and I knew that the elephant is the largest animal on land. I had not seen one, but I was scared and tried not to throw more food away. At that time, the hunger never came, so I asked my grandmother again when it will come. Any day, someday, any time, she said. I finally said to her, I'm ready for whatever that is, Grandma. Now, remembering that conversation, I fell to my knees and I cried heavily as if I was in a crying contest. I asked myself, is life long enough that my stomach will ever be full again?
Wow. Well, there's more to that story. Tell us what happened.
Well, after that, I moved on with life, and it was a struggle from that point. After she died, and it was just, when are you gonna leave the herd? So not having someone to shelter me at that point, and the little help we were getting from the United Nations was not enough to sustain life for years, not to mention days. So I just lived day by day, and one day I was sent £6. They call it 6 shilling Ugandan pound. And I would say those 6 shilling were like $1,000 or $1 million today. You could buy a lot of things with them. So I decided one of the days, it used to be like Monday and Wednesday were the marketing days where you could go and buy groceries and clothes and stuff. So I decided one of those days that I was gonna go and buy some food because I was starving and go and buy some casual clothes so I can go to church with the other kids. So, and I went for it. So that day I was really, really exhausted and starving. So, you know, right in front of me when I went in, there were just blue Safco jeans. And I feel like, that's it. This is where the money should go. But again, I was really hungry. I wanted to eat something. You know, and I keep going back and forth. I went back to where there were bread and, you know, all that kind of good food, you know, and I couldn't take my eyes off on the food, and I couldn't take my eyes off on the jeans. So I keep going back and forth, but I have to make a decision. So I decided to buy that pair of blue jeans. And the main reason I wanted to do that was to fit among my peers. As David Brooks said, that we tend to associate with people who are like us. You know, kids at that time who had parents who can give them more clothes were able to go to church and were able to flock together. So, but then if you don't have, you know, good, cool clothes, you know, they will not say it, but they will tend to flock their own way and leaving you behind. So at that time, I needed fit among my peers.
So to fit in and to be part of your group, you needed to be able to go to church and you needed a pair of jeans to do so.
I needed a pair of jeans.
Oh, amazing.
Not a bread.
So you had a choice to make, and that's quite a significant choice. So obviously you survived, and you've come to the America, and you've become a nurse practitioner. You're a registered nurse, and you're going to become a nurse practitioner pretty soon. It's pretty amazing stuff. What did you try to convey, or what did you hope to convey in writing this story to people?
I hope my patient will have the chance to look at it. You know, at some point in life, they feel like they had enough. At 79 years old, at 80 years old, and you have cancer, and you have some of the bad cardiovascular diseases, MI, CHF, you name it. And when you refer them to cardiac rehab, or a certain diet, or an exercise, you know, or a defibrillator, you know, they will say, after all, I'm 79 years old. What else do you need for me? They don't think they have a life to fetch for. They think they don't have more days to be happy. So in my story, I still wanted to let them see that even if death is imminent, you still have days and years to live for.
Wow. Talking about healing, Deirdre.
Isn't that great?
That's quite profound, Elijah. I really appreciate your writing it and sharing that with us.
Plus, you know, Linda, in that story, what captivated us when Elijah sent it to us, I mean, here he is studying how to help other people. And in that story, you realize what it's like to be a child who's scared. What is it like to be a child who fears, I don't have an adult who's going to help me, I don't have food, or these are, I mean, I think his story helps us to understand how really good healthcare professionals go beyond whatever the person is sitting in their office ostensibly there for, to actually try and find out the story. What is it? And I just think Elijah's going to be such a fabulous family nurse practitioner because he brings to every encounter with a patient, this rich experience he's had of what it means to lose family, what it means to find family again, how you survive.
Absolutely. And it strikes me also that in writing this, it must have been somewhat healing for you to write the story, to tell the story this way. And then anyone reading it, I think, will be inspired. I know there's more. You didn't read the whole story. You basically told us the end of it. But it's very profound, and I think it's illustrative of what this journal really offers. So tell us briefly what's in this upcoming journal, because this was last year's.
Well, Elijah did not send us anything this year. I'm going to have to talk to him after the show about that. But we do have some wonderful new writers, Linda, really good ones. One of our own people, a surgeon here at Upstate, wrote a profoundly moving story about an incident that happened early in her career. And I can't wait for people. I hope that you'll have her on the show to read for you like Elijah has done. We have some people from all across the United States writing about experiences that they've had, some electric shock treatments, what it's like to go through that and actually move through the depression that caused the need for the electric shock. But the after effect is you lose some memory. And what it's like then to be a young person trying to fit in, again, like Elijah's talking about, you want to fit in with your group, but you can't remember those instances that you had with them, and they can't understand why you don't remember. So her story is really quite compelling, I think.
Now, the edition's going to be launched. This is the 11th edition, Wednesday, October 26th, from 4 to 5 in the Medical Alumni Auditorium at Weiss-Cotton.
Yes.
Is that right? And this is open to the public?
It is open to the public, and what we do is have many of our local authors who are in there will come and read a portion, and we'll have our local artists who want to talk about their pictures will also be there to discuss it, and we'll have some refreshments. It's a very fun time.
That's wonderful. Now, tell me, if somebody wasn't able to come to this event, how would they get copies?
Oh, very easily. You can go on our website, which is www.thehealingmuse.org, or you can call our managing editor, Lois. Her number is 464-5404. Copies are $10, and I'm telling you, it would repay you enormously. You'll sit there for hours reading these stories and poems.
Now, one of the things you did bring with you today is one poem from the current edition that I'd love if you give us a quick little bit of background.
Thank
and,
you. I would love to. This is one of our longtime contributors. His name is Dr. Bruce Bennett, and he runs the creative writing department at Wells College in Aurora. He's been a big-time supporter of the Muse. I think he's the author of 14 or 15 books of poetry. Wonderful man, wonderful poet. And I thought that I would give us, just as a taste of this issue, it's the kickoff poem in our issue, and it's called Poetry and Grace. Poetry is not grace. It can't absolve a sinner or replace lost faith or solve conundrums by what's learned beyond the grave. But it is swift, unearned, and it can save. He's so wonderful. He's very punchy. It's right to the point. And
it also says a lot about what the journal is about.
I think it does. And you know, having Elijah here, you also see what the journal is about. People who've never been published before get a taste of what it's like to be famous. Right, Elijah?
Well, I just want to thank you both so much, Deirdre Neal, an associate professor of bioethics and humanities and nurse practitioner student and essayist, Elijah Duth. Thank you so much for coming in today and sharing all of this wonderful creative stuff, and hopefully people will go out and get copies of the Healing Muse. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.